You're listening to the HR Happy Hour Show with hosts Steve Bowes and Trish McFarlane. Since 2009, the HR Happy Hour Show has been bringing you thought leaders, workplace and technology experts, academics, and more to take on the most important and interesting topics impacting work, human resources, technology, and the workplace. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net. Hey, welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show. My name is Steve Bowes. It is great to be with you today. It is another cold, blustery, rainy day in Western New York where I live, but hopefully I'm told it's already spring somewhere in the world or in America. It's spring, and I hope it arrives here soon. But nonetheless, we will carry on. First of all, I want to thank our show sponsor, Virgin Pulse, www.virginpulse.com, sponsoring the HR Happy Hour Show since 1984. And check out their upcoming event, the Thrive Summit, at www.thrivesummit.com. Quick update from the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. Man, things are blowing up. It's crazy. We've done some shows with Ultimate Software, with IBM and NBC Universal, which were great. A new show launched on the network recently, The Human-Friendly Workplace, with host our friend Jason Lawrenson. And if that's not enough, a new Research on the Rocks episode with Molly and Madeline dropped just the other day. More great stuff to come, so just keep it locked on the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network. We are booking shows still into the spring. If you want to pitch me an idea, come on the show. You've got a great suggestion. You can tweet at the show at HR Happy Hour or send me an email, steve@h3hr.com. And I am so close. I've been teasing this for two or three shows. I am so close to announcing something really, really cool for the HR Happy Hour Show in a new format, a new form factor, a new technology even. Maybe one more week I'll be able to announce that for sure, but I am so excited about it. So stay tuned for that. Finally, check out hrtechconference.com. That's what I'm working on. Use my code Steve300 at www.hrtechconference.com. Use my code Steve300 for $300 off your registration for the event in Las Vegas. Okay, enough of my nonsense. We have a great, great guest waiting in the wings. Someone who's never been on the show before, I don't believe, and I don't know why it's taken me this long to have her on, and I'm so excited. Today we're going to be joined by Pat Milligan from Mercer. Pat is the global leader of Mercer's multinational client group and the architect of Mercer's When Women Thrive program. Throughout her career, she has pioneered and delivered innovative work in the areas of people strategy, talent management, and workforce engagement. Her work and thought leadership focuses on leading through disruption and workplace gender equity. During Pat's 12-year tenure with Mercer, she has held multiple leadership roles, including president of the North America region, president of Mercer's global talent business, and chief marketing and sales officer. Before joining Mercer, Pat led Mellon HR Services and held various P&L leadership roles at Towers Perrin. Pat is also an advisor to the World Economic Forum and drives Mercer's involvement in multiple projects. She has been recognized by Consulting Magazine as one of the nation's top 25 consultants and named among the women worth watching by Diversity Journal. Finally, she currently sits on the board of EDGE, the leading global assessment methodology and business certification standard for gender equality, and is an active mentor, sponsor, and passionate advocate for advancing progress for women at work, which is what we're going to talk about today. Pat, welcome to the HR Happy Hour Show.
Thank you. I'm so glad to be here and participating in positive happiness and good conversations.
So awesome.
Thank you, Steve, for inviting us.
It's great to have you here. I had to take a breath after that bio. It was fantastic. I mean, you're so – every time I read the bios of our guests, I'm impressed with our guests and depressed about the lack of things I've accomplished. So it is great to have you. We're going to talk about the When Women Thrive project and the most recent research, report that was just released maybe a month or so ago. And we want to get into that a little bit. But before we get into the details of the report and the findings and some of the ways organizations can get better at supporting women and women's economic standing in their careers, can maybe you give us a little bit of background, Pat, on the When Women Thrive project and how did it get started and what have you done so far? And maybe more importantly, Why did you decide that this was something you really wanted to be involved in?
So look, a great set of questions, and let me try to put them in a little bit of a context. You know, I think great organizations like Mercer, you know, we've got good capabilities. And one of the things, Steve, we did and had the honor of doing for years was partnering with the WEF on their gender parity annual report. So for a decade, great organization like the WEF looked at the state of women, and they looked at it from four lenses, right? Their labor force participation, their political standing, their education status, and their health. And, you know, it was honestly right before the 10th anniversary that we were participating in the work. And it was incredibly depressing, right? So for all of the effort, the energy, the focus, the discipline, you know, we were at a pretty tough point where we were moving backwards, not forwards, in particularly in terms of women's participation in the labor force. So first and foremost, you know, studying the analytics, the data, really important, but they really weren't resulting in any scenario that had parity or equality. So that was kind of first. I think the second is that, you know, so many great clients that we have the honor to work with, they're looking at diversity and women through the lens of the right workforce with the right people in the right countries around the world. And I think so many of the organizations we have the honor to partner with really feel like if they don't get it right on women, they really will not have the workforce of the future, because one of the single most underleveraged assets are women in the workforce. So we can come back and talk about
sure.
that. And look, and then third, at a personal level, you know, I mean, for me, I kind of done so many of the things that you do in great companies, grow businesses, drive P&Ls, but I felt like this was a nut that we were not cracking, and decided I would make gender, women, and women's future a big part of what I spent the last part of my career on. And I have not regretted that. It's
right.
been a pretty amazing run. So we can talk about that.
Yeah. And I'd love to talk about that in more detail. Like, I'd like to talk a little bit about the more recent research that's been published by When Women Thrive project. The most recent report is titled Accelerating for Impact, a 2018 gender inflection point. I just want to read a little blurb or a little data point from the introduction to the research. In the introduction to the report, it's noted that the World Economic Forum's annual Global Gender Gap Report showed deterioration in women's economic standing over the past several years. Calculated at the current rate of change, it will take 217 years to close the economic gap between the sexes. That's 47 years longer than projected in 2016, and 99 years longer than predicted in 2015. Finally, women are not expected to reach economic parity with men until 2234. So, I mean, that's a huge kind of statement at the beginning of the report and the research. Pat, I'd love for you to comment about what's been happening, especially recently, because it sounds like things have gotten, at least on the economic parity front, things have gotten a little bit more discouraging in just the last couple of years.
Yeah, I mean, look, you know, I mean, so, you know, we use the word inflection point because I think, Steve, you can look at it at that scenario and you can either get manically depressed, right?
Right.
You know, and just say, look, this work we've all been at, or you can get motivated to really disrupt the status quo. And look, maybe because I just came off a pretty intense launch of kind of women in media and entertainment and something, I really think the way we've been approaching this in the past, which is really how do we get women in equal representation at equal pay in organizational structures that have served us well for decades, is candidly not going to be the future.
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, again, one of the great things about the work you do is it's really all about talking about disruption and disrupting the status quo. And so, you know, I'll just look at it through two lenses, right?
Okay.
One is, great organizations in industries, financial services, technology, life sciences, to fast-moving consumer products are relentlessly focused on this issue. But I think one of the things you'll hear, and you'll certainly hear from both business leaders and some of the most innovative HR leaders, is they have to probably change the way they think about organizational progress and organizational success. And, you know, what do I really mean by that? you know, bringing women in to an organization with a structure, promotions, pay, you know, lateral moves, upward mobility. I mean, I think the thing we'll all talk about for the next several years is that the disruption in the environment around the future of work is actually going to create unprecedented opportunities, right? If you look at it and say, not only are we going to have five generations in the workforce, but, you know, within, by, you know, 2019, you know, as greater than 50% of the workforce will be in the gig economy and contractual
right.
workers,
mm-hmm.
we think that bodes really well for women, really, really well. So let's, you know, we can dig in, we can talk about that. But the thing, I think we really concluded that doing the same thing the same way, you know, and waiting for another several decades to get women to achieve equity and parity in a classic organizational model is actually not the focus, is not the exclusive focus, right? Figuring out how to get women in these fast-moving parts of the economy, working differently. We have to put as much energy in that as we do getting women better represented in traditional organizations, and we can certainly talk about both. But so I'm not – I mean, look, I'm discouraged if I felt we were going to do the same things the same way, but I really think the energy right now around – disrupting the status quo for women and other diverse populations, it's never been stronger.
Mm-hmm.
It's been stronger.
Yeah, Pat, thanks for that, for the context for sure, and sort of the thoughts around kind of the approaches to these issues. And that's interesting how this could go in a couple of different ways. It's really interesting, though, that we say, look, maybe the traditional approaches to try to solving these challenges have not been working that well. But that doesn't mean we should actually suggest a couple of things that we should probably try some new things, but also to say, like, we need to recognize the fact that lots of other external things are changing, right, in the nature of work and workforces and technology and the gig economy, and that we've got to understand and think about these problems also in the lens of things are changing all around us at the same time. On the one hand, it feels like that makes the problem even more complicated, right? Because sometimes, I don't know, maybe it's because I'm just like a simple person, right? And I want to have simple solutions, right? So I want to say, well, why don't we just run, you know, an analysis of our salary structures and, you know, give everybody a 4% raise who's, you know, below par or something like that, and that solves the problem. But that really doesn't, right? Especially when the world and the economy and technology are changing so much. Pat, one of the things I wanted to ask real quickly before we dive into some of the more specific recommendations is this kind of evidence of deterioration or lack of progress in women's economic standing that was noted in the report. Is this a global issue, or does it vary kind of from place to place, region to region, country to country? Are there anything you can look when you look at the data and say, well, some places and some countries are doing really well at this, and maybe we can kind of look at what they're doing and try to model some of what we're doing if we're not doing so well in those areas?
Yeah, it's a great question. So again, let's be very specific and a little tactical. You know, when we look at the four different measures, right, when we look, and then we'll shift to our report, mm-hmm. but what we look at is the world, our countries and economies, equipping women to thrive in the workplace? The simple answer is yes. So the two things that are most exciting are what when you look at the educational status of women and you look at the health status of women, those two indices, Steve, have improved dramatically.
Sure.
So the world is, you know, if you think about it, the world is educating girls, educating women, preparing them. You know, we can double click on, are we preparing them for the industries that are growing the fastest? And we can talk about that. But they are educating them, and their health is getting better. And they're actually participating in the political environment in much greater numbers. It's really labor force participation.
Really?
The stubborn data point is really labor force. So you know, you make them healthy, you bring them into the education system, you educate them, you get them into work. The most discouraging statistic is really that if you look at a global level, we never hit 70% labor force participation. Now, the reality is we certainly do in pockets around the world. So, you know, we all get tired sometimes of talking about the Nordics, right? God
right,
bless the Nordics.
Yeah.
I mean, think about it. They're kind of the World Cup, and we're, you know, in the U.S. isn't. But, you know, there are pockets in the world. So if you really look at all three of the Nordic countries, Switzerland, you look at certain countries right now in Africa, the progress in Canada, you know, there are pockets where there is great alignment between the education system, the political system, but also the training and investment in, you know, reskilling and bringing in women into the workforce. So there are great pockets of success. The real challenge is the largest economies that we rely on dramatically, right? You know, if you think about it, the United States, the UK, Germany, Europe, you know, Japan are not making the progress.
Right.
So, and so our research is really geared, you know, both at those emerging economies where you can say, skip everything everyone else did wrong, but absolutely trying to get the most sophisticated economies to do this differently is what a lot of our work is about.
Yeah, no, Pat, thanks for that. Yeah, and it's Japan in particular you mentioned. I read a lot. I don't know why. I'm fascinated with what's going on in the labor market in Japan. And I guess because, you know, they have got this demographic kind of time bomb situation going on there. And I've read some things that suggest that it could be coming here to the U.S. as well, right, with birth rates going down and workforce getting older and things like that. It's really interesting what's happening in places like that, and could be happening here too. Pat, let me do a quick reset. This is the HR Happy Hour Show. My name's Steve Bowes. Sure. We're joined by Pat Milligan from Mercer. We are talking about the When Women Thrive program and research. And in particular, we're going to get into some of the information and the details around the most recent study that's been released. And of course, in the show notes as well, we'll provide links for you to get. This report is huge. There's a ton of great data in it. So we can't cover everything in the data. So I'll encourage folks after the show to go out to the website and download the report for themselves. But most of the folks who listen to the show, Pat, are HR leaders in organizations, right? And wrestling or struggling with or hopefully having some progress on these kinds of issues in the labor force at their own organization. In the report, you talk a lot about the increased use of data and analytics and how, if they're applied correctly, can be used in organizations to help accelerate women's careers and economic standing. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about that, because we've heard about data and analytics for probably now a decade in HR, but maybe we can comment a little bit specifically about what are the kinds of things you see organizations do around understanding their data and applying more advanced analytical tools to make progress in these specific areas.
That's great. So look, I think, again, in credit to some of the great HR professionals and organizations that listen to your show, the advancements, Steve, we've made in workforce analytics and workforce insights are mm-hmm. paying off dramatically in the area of women and diversity, mm-hmm. right? So, you know, many of the organizations that we work with are sophisticated at looking at the talent flows and the what we call their internal labor market, right?
Right.
So first and foremost, what our research shows is that there are two sides to this problem, right? There's a personal and leadership side, but there's an organizational muscle, and the companies that had actually changed the trajectory, bended the curve on the future representation of women, had really built their strategies around proof and analytics, not anecdotes and hypotheses. So let me say it again. Proof and analytics really makes a difference, right? And it isn't, we can get fixated on pay equity, but what the real progress, and we've seen this, is that when organizations really look at the talent map and the talent flow of their women, it comes down to four very simple pieces of analytics. First and foremost, are we recruiting and bringing enough women into this our organization at all levels, right? So how are we bringing women in? Second, how are we promoting women, and what kind of performance system are they in? And when do they get disadvantaged from a promotion at a performance perspective, because it's highly correlated with when they fall behind from a pay equity.
Mm-hmm.
So do we know that? Do we know that our men and women are treated equally, performance management, ratings, promotion, and pay? And that's very complex. And then the other bookend is a relentless focus on women exiting and leaving the organization. Because, you know, the whole notion of the hamster churn is, you know, one of the things we rely on the workforce analytics team to do is break down the walls between talent acquisition and exits, right? So making sure that we're keeping women, we're bringing our women in, but we're not actually losing as many as we're bringing in. So I think the sophistication we're seeing on the data and analytics side is actually resonating deeply with boards of directors, with executive teams, because it's not about the anecdotes. It's here's our organization, here's the state of our women, and then very specifically, here are the levers we need to pull.
Right.
Because one of the things, Steve, I think we have to be careful about is it's very easy to do the program du jour, right? Let me double my paternity benefits. Let me do this. But our view is that the proof in the analytics is the backbone for then deciding what are the programs that are really going to pay off for your organization and what are the processes. But without that baseline, we see people waste a lot of energy, a lot of effort, and candidly, a lot of money.
Yeah, and that's really interesting.
So that was clear in our report. You know?
Yeah.
You got to start with the analytics.
Yeah, and again, beyond that surface level, beyond that, okay, let's examine every engineer level two in the organization and make sure they're paid about the same. Sure, that's important, and organizations are doing that, and they should do that. But until you're getting into the nitty-gritty of the data to say, well, at each step along the typical career progression, we're seeing disproportionately more males continue to advance along that traditional progression, and for some reason women are dropping out, or they're not progressing in as great numbers, and why is that happening? And you mentioned performance, right? And promotion, right? And
right.
We know, right, from data has shown this pretty clearly, the studies that have been done around performance management and the language that's used, and women get disproportionately marked down for the same kinds of traits that their male colleagues get better reviews for, right? And we know that happens. And but if you're not willing to look for it, to get beyond kind of these surface things, right? The program du jour, as you said, or just making sure your pay is more or less within a couple of percentage points of equity, you're going to miss those things, and you're going to continue to have problems down the line.
Absolutely. And so that, and again, I'll use very conscious words. I mean, prosecuting the data and holding leaders accountable is one of the single biggest determinants that the report showed for future representation. So it isn't just, does HR and the business study, analyze, it then see flips to the leadership and behavioral side. Are the leaders that are leading our organization, are they passionate about this data? Do they use this data to drive their business process the same way they might manage sales or product development or new market entry? It's the organizations that integrate this data into the way they run their business that are actually predicting much higher representation of women.
Yeah.
So I think that's a great, it's very practical, but it's something that I'd say less than 35 to 40% of the organizations in our survey are doing.
Yeah. Pat, we could talk about data and analytics and digging into this, and we could do this for another hour, and there's tons more detail in the report that folks can download and read after the show. But I want to talk about another part of the report, another part of the analysis that you guys dug into, which is analyzing the importance of the health and wellness of employees, and in particular, the importance and the benefit, quite frankly, to organizations of addressing these differing health and wellness needs, even financial wellness too, and I'd love for you to comment about that, and how it can be different, or it is different, right, for women and men in the organization. And that's not something always that's easy to arrive at, right? It's easy, I think, in organization and benefits design and program design to say, well, let's just treat everybody the same and that's fair. I'd love for you to comment a little bit about what you found in this area of health and wellness.
Yeah, but look, I mean, hats off to one of my colleagues, Dr. Lorna Friedman, who's driven a lot of this work with Hagnell Banshin on our team. Mm-hmm. But it was really, Steve, I'll admit, a very significant surprise to us that one of the strongest correlations for retention and future representation of women was linked to whether or not the organization understood the health risks and the health performance of their women. Mm. And what do I mean by that? I mean, we've done a lot on well-being around the classic, health incidences and the health expenses, but very few organizations actually take the time to analyze their health data by gender.
Yeah.
Right? And so one of the things we saw was that there was really, you could actually, you found a very serious risk assessment that when women were experiencing certain health incidences, when they were using the EAP a certain way, when they were actually going out on short-term illness or disability, when you ask them why would they leave the organization, it was highly correlated to physical and mental stress. And so I think this is an area that we've underinvested in heavily. And it's really, I think this is, again, breaking down the walls within HR, you know, great benefits organizations around the world who care deeply about well-being, mm-hmm. but I don't think they work as closely with both the talent leaders and the diversity inclusion leaders to say, look, what do we understand about the health performance of our women? And one of the things that we've really been working on is really, and the research shows, is not just, it's women at all five generations. We relentlessly focus on maternity, which we need to, but where women start leaving the workforce and leave in much larger numbers are in middle management, and when they have multiple levels of caregiving, both child care and elder care.
Yeah.
So we really dug into what do organizations need to do to create an enabling well-being environment, both for them as individuals, for their role as caregiver, both for children, but more increasingly for the elderly.
Yeah. And
so
that's
again, we could talk for hours about, but you know, we've got some great partners in the care space that are saying, like, if you don't create a care economy within your organization, so focus first on the health and performance of your women, but all generations of your women, and then understand their care economy, it was seen as one of the single biggest retention opportunities for women.
Yeah.
I wouldn't leave my company because they care about my well-being. They create an environment where I can take care, if I have children, take care of my children, but they also make much for me to manage the care for the elderly people I'm responsible for. It was that whole ecosystem that was amazing.
Yeah, and that's really interesting finding, particularly around the elder care. I did a show, not to keep promoting my own show, but I did a show at the end of the year. I think I'll relink that to this show as well because it's relevant to this conversation about a company, a new benefits tech startup that's designed around helping employers support their employees specifically around elder care, right? It's designed just for that. And I never even knew such a thing existed until I met the guy, and it was, and how important, and some of the statistics around how many employees, and I think disproportionately women probably, are charged with and will be charged with these really tough elder care issues going forward in the next, I don't know, couple of decades, is in the U.S. anyway, is remarkable. And really, really important.
Yeah, when I say not, you know, look, there are some radical approaches when we look at the changes in the structure of the workforce, all the things, Steve, but I think there's some very practical things in our report that, you know, are really great building blocks, right? These are muscles that we can flex mm-hmm. within the organizations that you and I know, but they have to break down the traditional walls.
Yeah.
Right. That is one of the biggest limits, is trying to solve this problem through a traditional HR organizational structure. Right. So I think that's one of the other things we're working very hard on, is to actually approach this issue from the outside in through the report, so that people, you know, that have the kind of roles that, you know, listen to this show can say, look, it doesn't matter whether I sit in diversity or I sit in health or I sit in talent acquisition. It's going to take our village working seamlessly to solve this issue, and I think that offers a lot of promise.
I think it does too, and I think that's a really, really important point. And there's so much of this, and this is kind of the last little part of conversation I think we'll have around this information and this data. And again, I'm going to encourage everybody to go out and get a copy of this report and read through it in totality, because it's fantastic, and there's so much great detail and recommendations in the report. But the last part of the report gets into stuff that's always so vexing, no matter what kind of change it is really that inside the organization. And this is around organization culture and making cultural changes and kind of changing deep-seated kind of beliefs and policies and procedures, or just kind of, you know, just making the case for change. I'd love, Pat, for you to comment a little bit around the culture angle here, and whether it's, influencing leaders or building more broad-based support for these kind of initiatives, or maybe even in some instances still convincing people this makes good business sense, right, if that still needs to be done. I'd love for you to comment a little bit around what are some of the ways that the folks listening to this show can kind of work around these cultural issues with respect to improving women's standing in the workplace?
Yeah, look, I think, Steve, a great question. And I guess I kind of look at this through three lenses that our research showed that cultures that really believe that this is an opportunity and a problem to be solved throughout the organization are making progress. And what do I mean by that? I mean, we put a lot of energy into very senior level of change, right? Mm-hmm. Does the board care about this? Does the CEO, does the executive? But candidly, and I'm going to call this out, it's the managers in the middle, and it's particularly the men. So I think creating an environment and a culture that is more transparent for men to really talk about how do they really feel about this issue. So some of the best work we see and certainly what we're seeing in the report is that this notion that men really matter and their views and that this isn't just fix the women, it's create an environment where the men and women can thrive, but be candid about what do men need to think about differently,
mm-hmm.
right? And so one of the things I think we should be much more transparent about is getting a culture that is thriving because of the participation of women is much easier in high growth businesses and economies than low growth, right? So I think understanding from a culture perspective, what is our culture right now? Is it growth? Is it innovation? Will all men win and women? Or are we in an environment now where to get the representation we want, we actually have to promote more women and therefore men could have a very negative feeling. So I think understanding that culture first and foremost, I think is really important. And then making it safe to have these really substantive conversations. So somehow creating an environment that while women may need, their ability to convene and work together, a culture that says we're in this together, men are welcome, but also accountable, I think is really important. And so, maybe in a future show, I do not want to take us down the path of cultures right now that are at risk because of the lack of sensitivity around harassment and issues that we all care about. But I think that's what's great about that. It's causing a dialogue. So I think it's making it safer to have that dialogue. And then I think, culturally, from a global perspective, really understanding how is this issue showing up. We talked about a Japan versus the Nordics versus Canada. I mean, really understanding is the culture itself really supportive, or do we have to do as much work in the community and the culture as we do within our own company? So I think culture, as you said, is very complex, but I think there are some simple things we can do to make this conversation much more acceptable and let everyone's voice be heard, because men in this conversation matter, and it's not just men at the top, and it's men who are also trying to get the right health and the right life balance. And so I think we're very optimistic that just like other social issues, millennials and this workforce will force this dialogue in a way that maybe we haven't experienced before. So I'm actually quite optimistic about that.
Yeah, that's some great great context, and Pat, it just made me think of so many things. I was writing down some notes as you were going through your response there, and I was thinking about just about every initiative I've ever heard of, right, in the organization, any kind of initiative that requires change, whether it's technological or strategy or just any kind of organizational change, right? That old line is, oh, well, this will never succeed without the proper support from the C-suite or leadership, right? And I think that's true, right? For most major change kind of initiatives in organizations, they tend not to be successful if they're not supported from the very highest levels of the organization. But that support, especially in larger organizations and maybe ones that have been around for a while and maybe aren't growing, that support is not enough, right? All these things have to be, they're directly impacted by the folks in the middle, often many of them who are men, right? Just because, and maybe that gets back to the earlier conversation we were talking about career progressions and how in many organizations, in many kind of functions, women kind of were opting out or getting screened out or just deciding to get off that treadmill, right? Because they weren't seeing the success that they should have been seeing, leaving kind of that kind of vast middle ground of folks that are kind of stuck in their ways and entrenched and maybe not maybe buying in as much as they should, even if the CEO or the C-suite kind of says that they should. I hate to feel like, you know, I'm blaming myself for this, but like, you know, that's me, people who look like me who aren't doing the right thing necessarily. No, that's not me.
Well, look, and I think there is a good one thing that is very good, you know, I think, you know, very positive about the research. It does provide, you know, it's action and execution oriented. I think we all get frustrated, Steve, at this stage, you know, kind of on some of these issues. It's not just reflective and prevalence. And it's, look, there's a toolkit there. You know, we know that organizations that have the right kind of organizational muscle, passionate leaders, really personal conversations and agendas, and really, you know, a multi-year approach because you have to persevere. If you actually couple that with, as we said, the data, the analytics, the right programs, the right processes, you know, one last, you know, to me, hope is that I think great companies that are leading in technology are really partnering with us to help take a lot of the biases out of some of these processes. And that bodes, you know, people don't think they have biases, but we all do.
Right.
So using technology in some of these processes, I think, is actually going to also help us from an acceleration point. So maybe you're hearing me say, look, if I look at this issue through the WEF, which I have a lot of respect for, it can seem intractable, but I do think there's, you know, there's real reason to be optimistic. And it's a combination of the changes in the world of work plus some of the innovations, you know, we're all piloting that make us be optimistic for certainly, you know, our daughters, our granddaughters, and this next generation. And they, you know, they're pushing and actively engaged. So I think it's a great time to be immersed in this issue. And I'm so glad you took the I really appreciate you taking the time to talk about it.
Oh, I'm super excited you were able to join us, Pat. And I've read through the report. It's fascinating. And the, you know, the title of the report, as you said, right at the top of the show, an inflection point, and that can be a good thing or can be a bad thing. And I think the research, the information, the recommendations that you'll find throughout the When Women Thrive research will help you as an HR leader and help your organization turn this into an opportunity for success, not just for the women and all the people in your organization, but for the organization itself. There's tons of great information in there. Again, we'll provide the link in the show notes. But if you just Google like Mercer When Women Thrive research, you'll get right to it as well if you don't want to, you know, read through my notes. But I highly encourage everybody to check this out. And we'll be continuing this conversation, as Pat suggested. We'll come on, we'll do another show later in the year, maybe talk about some of these issues even further. I've dug into some of them in different levels as well, right? I mentioned the elder care company I had on. I've had on some diversity inclusion shows. I've been like, this topic is like, it's resonating with our listeners for sure. And so I don't want to walk away from it at all, right? So Pat, anything else you want to just share with the audience? We've mentioned the research a bunch of times. We'll provide the link. Anything else we want to point folks to before we let you go?
Again, I think, you know, as an HR professional or a business leader, you know, stepping out of your positive and safe sandbox and looking at these issues, you know, through a more holistic lens, I think we can all, while we all love our technical expertise and we love our analytics and we love our technology, I really do think make a friend in this issue that is actually not where you live. I mean, that's really strong advice. So whether it's for me to chief diversity officers or our talent leaders, you know, really try to break down the walls, and we think you can make a lot of progress. So I think that's something we're just beginning to see, Steve, but I think it holds a lot of potential. So, but we would be glad to, you know, talk about this during the year and turn this inflection point into a positive outcome for all. So thank you.
No, outstanding. Thank you so much, Pat. Again, it's the When Women Thrive research. I'll provide the links in the show notes. Thanks so much for Pat for joining us on the show. She's a great, great person in the space, great leader, and just doing some amazing work. So thanks to Pat. I want to also say thanks to our sponsor at Virgin Pulse again, helping on the show forever. They make it possible. www.virginpulse.com. And one last reminder, subscribe to all the HR Happy Hour Podcast Network shows wherever you get your podcasts. So thanks for listening to the show today. My name's Steve Bowes. This has been the HR Happy Hour Show. We will see you next time. Bye for now. Thanks for listening to the HR Happy Hour Show. your source for information and conversation on work, the workplace, technology, and more. Learn more and listen to all the show archives at www.hrhappyhour.net.